This is J. Lewis Mills, and you are about to be put on the level with J. Lewis Mills. Whether it's truth, controversy, good news, or bad. If it offends you, I'm sorry. If you agree, that's great. We talk about it all here because everything needs to be put on the level. Come in and join the conversation. I promise you'll be glad you did. Hello, hello. How is everyone doing? This is J. Lewis Mills, and you are put on the level with J. Lewis Mills. This is my first show after Oscars weekend, and I have to say, I was pretty impressed with the Oscars this year. There was a lot of inclusion. I would like to congratulate Jordan Peele on his original screenplay Oscar for Get Out. As well, you know, we had an NBA champion come in and show that he is definitely going to be a champion in our business. I would like to also congratulate Kobe Bryant on his Oscar for, I think it was animated short film. I mean, I would like to congratulate all of the winners, but, you know, those are two people that I am a big fan of. So congratulations, gentlemen. I look forward to seeing a lot more work from the both of you. So, I hope you all had a good week this past week. The show that I did last week with Miss Haley Hudson and Miss Kendall Coyer was a pretty big success. We had a good amount of listeners, and I received some good feedback after the show, so thank you all for that. But this week, I decided to, you know, kind of lighten the mood a little bit. My show this week is about laughter being the best medicine. And I am so happy to have back one of my friends. He actually helped me start on the level with J. Lewis Mills. He was my very first guest.
Yeah.
My guest this week is Mr. Paul Elia.
Yeah.
He is a stand-up comedian. He
Throwback
is an actor.
Tuesday.
He is a stand-up comedian. He is an actor. You can catch him in comedy clubs all over the country. And now let me just go ahead and welcome. How you doing, Daddy-O?
Oh, man, I love being called Daddy-O. You know what I mean? So I feel so already I feel in good spirits. You know
there
what
you
mean?
Go.
Someone
there
is
you go.
Acknowledging my parenting abilities in the future. You know what I mean? So ain't nothing wrong with that. J. Lewis, it's been a while, bro.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, it has been. We still haven't had that lunch yet that you're buying, so...
Yeah, man, you know what I mean? Yeah, I'm going to keep trying to avoid it, see how long I can stretch it out for. So eventually, hopefully, I can find a coupon someplace, and, you know, we can use that so I can save around $8.
Hey, you know, I'm not mad. There's a lot of places that take EBT cards, so, you know, we can just go ahead and do it that way.
Hey, man, nothing wrong with that either, you know? But you can't get hot food on EBT cards.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. I mean,
really?
You just have
you get
to, yeah.
Food?
Yeah, you just have to tell them that you're homeless, but yeah, you can get it.
You know, I used to work at a liquor store for many, many years. My family owned it, so EBT was a big source of transactions.
Uh-huh.
At my parents' liquor store, so that was one of the rules about EBT.
What would people usually come in and buy with their EBT card? Do you remember?
Yeah, people would buy, I mean, everything. People buy chips, people buy candy, people buy water, people buy soda, people would buy, you know, like I feel like people used EBT and they were buying junk food with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just in my, you know, in my memory.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we didn't really have a whole lot of healthy stuff. Like, if people were to use EBT... Uh-huh. I would say use it at like a grocery store.
Absolutely.
But when they would come to my store, they use EBT because predominantly, like, I have a whole aisle for just chips.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And, like,
yeah.
we had a couple different types of loaves of bread. So if they're going to get their food, they're going to go to like Myers or wherever that is that they go within the area, whatever grocery store is there. But when they wanted to get some chips and some soda and other products of that nature.
Okay.
They hit.
I can remember going into, I think I was at a Ralph's a grocery store one time, and this woman stepped up to the counter, and she had steaks, she had shrimps, she had lobster tails, she had, you know, all kind of like, and you know, she had the bags of Doritos and Oreos and like a full basket full of stuff. And you know, there was somebody behind her, and then I was the third person in line. And I remember when it was time for her to pay, this chick pulled out four different EBT cards.
Ooh!
And she paid her bill with all four of the cards. And the person behind her knew what those cards were. And he just went batshit crazy. He was like, I'm sitting here, I'm working 80 hours a week, and all I can buy is this fucking ramen, and you've got those EBT cards, and you're buying all this steak and this shrimp. What the hell is wrong with you? And she looked at him, and she said, I just know how to play the game.
Ooh!
I just know how to play the game. And I just stood there. I mean, of course, I wasn't going to say anything because she looked crazy in the anyway, so I wasn't going to get her on me, but... You know, the whole EBT card thing is...
Let me tell you something.
It's kind of wild.
Crazy people don't eat shrimp. You know, that's one thing I learned. So I'm telling you, this woman was very sane. You know, like buying shrimp is a very sane decision. So I don't think this woman was as crazy as she may appear. But I would say this. People, I did notice that there were some people that would get... electronic bridge card benefits, and they would, which bridge card, which is pretty much food stamps, they would get these benefits and they would squander them and use them and sort of take advantage of the system, which is which is something that is, you know, I mean, I feel like if someone has, like, we don't know what she's using that for. What if it's her anniversary, you know, and she's like, you know, let me try to enjoy a steak dinner with some shrimp one time for me and my family, you know? And also the electronic bridge card or the bridge cards, they're the EBT, it's not a whole lot of money. It's like $500 for the month for food.
Yeah.
So it's not even that much. So it's like, if some guy's working all day and he can only afford ramen, he needs a new job.
New job. Like,
that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, when I first moved to LA, I was doing catering and I was also working at a nightclub, and I was making like almost $200 a night. And I was working 3-4 nights a week. So I was doing okay. You know, I think if you make more than $2,000 a month, I think you know, that's like poverty now, you know, $2,000 a month.
Yes,
so
it is.
So it's like, if you're working a job and you're only getting $10 an hour, how many hours do you have to work to make $2,000 a month?
Exactly.
So you can't work that job, playa.
Yeah, that's true. So let's talk a little bit about laughter, you know, being the best medicine. And, you know, I chose this topic and I chose you for this topic because, you know, you are a stand-up comedian. You're, you know, you are one of the best out there right now that I've seen out here locally in Los Angeles. But I've been reading some different articles online, and I'm going to be posting one on the show page for the archives when this does go into my archive. But I didn't really realize that, you know, laughter is seriously a good medicine. It does, you know, help with stress. It helps with high blood pressure. And you know, as kids, we seem to laugh a lot.
Yeah. But
once we get older in life, you know, it seems like life just gets too serious, and some of us forget to laugh and forget to, you know, take a little time out of life and have a little bit of enjoyment. So I would like for you to speak to, you know, that notion that laughter is definitely the best medicine.
You know, I thought laughter was the best medicine, and then I had Percocet, and let me tell you, Percocet got me feeling a kind of way.
Hooked on the perks. Hooked on the perks.
Man, that is too funny. I bet you the guy that like owns Percocet or thought of that formula is like, look at all this free advertising we're getting. We're making a killing.
Yeah, he's going to send me a t-shirt. Thanks, homie.
Yeah, man, this interview was sponsored by Percocet.
Percocet.
and Molly Percocet. Hey. it's a really good message in that song. There's no cursing in this, right, Jay Lewis?
No, you can say what the fuck you want to.
Ooh, man. My favorite Future line, he goes, Percocet, Molly Percocet, chase a check, never chase a bitch. What? It's such an interesting line. It's such a clever way of saying the same thing that I think rappers say over and over for years.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. They just need to remind people. Listen, I'm about my money. I'm not trying to fuck bitches. And then you'll see the video, and it's just all video vixens. So I'm just kind of like, I'm a little confused here.
Yeah,
this is a ad herring argument, I believe. So, but hey, man, laughter obviously is very helpful, and it's helped me in many ways. And I think the term medicine just is a type of external item that has chemicals that you add into your body,
and it
helps rebuild your body,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's why the thing with laughter, it's so much. It's a natural medicine. It's a natural form of a natural ritual. Or I don't know if ritual is the right word. It's probably the totally wrong word, but
I mean, I think laughter is a way to self-medicate, you know?
Yeah, man. You know, like I like yoga in a way. Like I don't know if people consider yoga medicine.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and I don't know if people will consider going to the gym medicine, or people will consider calling your mother, or rebuilding old friendships and facilitating new ones.
Mm-hmm.
All those things can medicate in certain respects.
Yes. Now I don't take away from, and I, you know, I've got a lot of friends in the healthcare industry. I am in no way trying to say, you know what, just stop taking your prescribed medication and start laughing and you'll be fine. That's not what I'm saying. I'm
just saying
that as another form of medicine. I'm not, you know, if you have to take medicine for whatever you're taking it for, by all means, make sure you pop your pills. Make sure you do what you have to do.
Right.
But at the same time, what I am saying, and what I would like to see more people doing, is incorporate more laughter into your life as a help in order to make yourself feel better.
Yeah.
Prescribed medication is not the only way to make yourself feel better. You can go and, you know, watch a comedy show. You can go to a stand-up comedy show and watch that. And I guarantee you, if the comics are funny, you will come out of there just feeling good because you're laughing.
And if the comics are whack, you know, you want a refund.
Exactly.
But, I think that it's all perspective, man. It's all perspective. And I find humor in a lot of things. And I've been writing about a lot of personal things lately. I mean, I've been writing about religion recently.
Ooh.
And I've been writing, and it's, you know, I'm talking about it in a way that makes sense to me. And I'm finding, and I find humor in some certain respects.
Yeah.
So, definitely laughter is essential, and it's a, free. You don't need insurance, you know.
No, you don't need it. So let me ask you this, Paul. You know, we're our country right now is going through a lot, and you know there are a lot of serious topics on the table. You know, you've got the mass shootings that are going on, and we've got a president that is absolutely 100% unequivocally less than presidential. But when it does come to the seriousness of the tone or the state of our country right now, take, as I was just talking about, Parkland. You know, do you think it would be inappropriate to, you know, as soon after that happened, do you think it would be inappropriate to try and have a comedy show there in Parkland? Do you think, what is your take, because you are a comedian, what is your take on people saying, you know, there's sometimes you laugh and there's sometimes you don't, and we're just in a serious time right now, so laughter is the last thing that we need. How do you feel when someone says something like that?
Well, I always respect people's resistance towards certain things. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it's extremely motivating, and it makes total sense when there's a loss of life.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I completely respect people's decisions to do whatever. You know, because I get it. I've been through mm-hmm. that. I've lost people and throughout my life, and I totally get it, understand.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Donnell Rollins said something really interesting on stage. He said, "I think you can really talk about anything on stage if you have something clever to say."
Yes.
You know, if you have something clever to say about any situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like people understand that and respect that, but I feel like when that's just on stage, but the whole inception of getting people through doors. I mean, if there's all these terrible things happening in their lives, people aren't going to buy tickets to go to a club.
Yeah.
And I understand that. There's been times where I've had bad days, man. I've had bad days, and I'm like, you know, I'm taking a day off today. I can't be at the comedy club, but also I go significantly more than average human beings.
Mm-hmm.
But so I get it, and it kind of goes into, remember our first episode with the Kathy Griffin thing?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It kind of goes into that. Like, I know this is not really answering the question directly, but it's like she did a very low form of joke that was just really just violent and disturbing, and she played that off as comedy, and sometimes people aren't in the mood for that. So it's pretty much the same situation. People will always find laughter ain't going nowhere. It doesn't have an expiration date.
Absolutely.
You know, you can hold your laughs hostage as long as you want, but just mm-hmm. know that you can pull them out whenever you want, and it's a no expiration date.
Would you ever, and I mean this to, like, if you had a friend that you unfortunately had to go to a funeral service for, or you had a family member that you had to go to a funeral service for, and you got up to talk, would you think it appropriate or inappropriate at that time to start trying to crack jokes to the audience?
I mean, I don't know, man. That's so funny that someone's like, hey guys, I'm doing a funeral tomorrow, so I just want to try some of these jokes out.
You know, and I asked that question because, you know, I've been to funerals, and you know, I've seen, you know, there's that one fucking guy or there's that one chick that thinks, you know, now is the time to try and tell a joke. So would you say, okay, so let's say it's a fellow comedian, and this person was funny like from sun up to sundown, and they treated everything as a joke. Would you feel it appropriate at the celebration of their life, which is what funerals are called now, the celebration of life? Yeah. Would you feel it appropriate to get up there and do what you thought that person would do or would want you to do? Or would you say, you know what, this is a funeral. I get it. You know, y'all call it a celebration of life. My mama and them been calling it a funeral ever since I was born. So this shit's a funeral to me. So it's not appropriate. Like, how would you see that? Would it matter who the person was? Or do you think, no, dude, funerals, no, they're completely out?
Yeah, I'd have to assess the situation. Like, I'd have to see who's there. But, I mean, funerals are, it's kind of like a hard thing to answer, per se. But
yeah,
I would say that I do believe that funerals are a celebration of life. And I've been to a funeral before. And I've seen someone give a speech about the fallen, and they definitely had a lot of, things that they said that made me smile. And a lot of it was stories. They were like, I'll tell you when I first met Randy, blah, blah, blah. And then they were saying some really interesting story about this man that passed away, who was a dear friend of mine at the time. And it was very funny. And I think it really depends. I think it depends on the intent. So, like, I would never go up and do a joke for the sake of, oh, I want to get laughs because I want people to think I'm funny.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing about comedy. It needs to have a purpose other than, you know, I want people just to think how great I am and how cool I am and that I'm funny.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's self-serving comedy and there's selfless comedy.
Yes.
Right. And there's self-serving comedy where it's like, hey, look how funny I am. Look at me, guys. I'm funny. Mm-hmm. And those aren't really, I don't really consider those people comedians, you know? And then there's other comics that are like, that there's a point to a lot of the things that they're saying. And a lot of what they're saying is, it's just a fun performance. And it's something that's just, you know, and you can see it and you can tell. So, and most of the people that like to think that they're funny, and they just want to be funny just for them, are the ones that never do try stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
The ones at the bars saying other people's jokes that they've heard and they pass them off as their own. So it's like,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
But that's pretty much it, man. That's what I was going to say. But to answer your question, obviously I've naturally have been conditioned by the grace of God to, look at life in a very humorous way and look at situations and find humor and love in a lot of things. So I'm very blessed for that.
Now, see, you bring up a pretty good thing when you say that you've been blessed to see life in a humorous way. And I feel like all of the good ones, all of the good stand-up comics, you know, they just have, I forgot who it was that was talking, but somebody said it's like a third eye. You know, you see the world in a completely different way than other people do. So I understand that for some people, it's just innately in them to see most everything as being funny. So, you know, has there ever been a time where, you know, it was a serious moment, but you were just like, dude, I just got to say the funniest thing, that nobody else was thinking? Has something like that ever happened with you?
Well, I speak
good morning.
Thanks. I speak two languages. I speak English and I speak joke.
Okay.
Joke in itself and comedy is another language to me. And I feel like I've learned how to take instances and experiences and put it through this filter that knows how to make it into a joke. So I'm very selective now on what I decide to make a joke, because there's certain things where I'm like, okay, I can see I could make this a joke, but I don't think I want to talk about this right now. I think I want to start talking about this stuff.
Okay.
You know, and so... Yeah, I mean, you can find humor in anything, really, if you look hard enough. Mm-hmm. But I think when you kind of know what works for you, it's sort of, you know, you're a little more selective.
Okay. Now take a tragedy, and I hope that it's not too soon to ask this question, but take a tragedy like Parkland, or take a tragedy like any other mass shooting that has gone on here in this country. If you were hosting a comedy show and you heard a comic go up and try and make jokes about something that was so tragic, how would you as a host feel? Or would you come out? This is a bit of a long question, so just bear with me. Would you come out and try and defend comedy, so to speak? And I ask you that because there was a long time ago, I think it was sometime in the 90s, there was a transgender comedian, and her name was Flame. I don't remember what it was, but I think her name was just Flame. And Cheryl Underwood was the host of the show. And she came out, Flame came out, talking about how Cheryl Underwood looked like Wesley Snipes and Tu Wong Fu. And she was just, she was basically like just talking so much shit about Cheryl Underwood. And Cheryl Underwood came out, and if you or my listeners just Google Cheryl Underwood and Flame, and you will see Cheryl Underwood came out and laid this person's soul to rest. I don't remember everything that she said, but she came out and she said, "Don't you ever disrespect me. I've been doing this long enough." And then, you know, she went on to say, you know, she was trying to make it funny, I guess. She went on to say, the only thing you have, because Flame was saying how jealous Cheryl Underwood was of her. And Cheryl Underwood said, "The only thing I want from you is that dick, if you still have one attached." And the whole crowd just got up and they were yelling and screaming. So she actually came back out after a comic set, and she defended herself and she defended comedy. So not, of course, if someone's talking about the mass shootings, they're not speaking specifically about you. But would you ever come out and kind of like refute a comic's bit?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, if I were to refute, I'd have something clever to say.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. You can say anything you want if you have something clever to say. If you have something that, if there's a point, you can say anything. And that's, you really can. Like, so, I think Flang, like, you know, like, That's why there's this show on Comedy Central right now that they do every Tuesday also at the Comedy Store called Roast Battle. And it's a show where two comics go on stage and they roast each other, mm-hmm. and they try to say the most, I mean, this one guy, one of my favorite roast jokes, this one guy, he was roast battling this heavier set dude.
Mm-hmm.
So the skinny guy is battling this really heavy set guy, and he goes, "So, guys, Brandon Bricks is obviously very fat." He was like, he was actually in the movie Planet of the Apes playing the planet. And it got such a huge response. And,
yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's a very clever way of saying that this guy is overweight.
Mm-hmm.
And people laughed, and even you chuckled at it, because obviously I would never deliberately make fun of people that are overweight.
Absolutely.
That is, that's being an asshole.
Yes. Yes.
But finding a clever way of saying something and masking it in with something intelligent,
mm-hmm.
is, you get a pass for that.
Yeah.
So that
brings up another question for me. You say you get a pass. If people laugh, if it's a joke and people laugh, is it really funny?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if people, I mean, I have my own taste of comedy. I mean, yeah. But if people are laughing at some joke, if it's about a tragedy, mm-hmm. and I mean, I've seen Dave Chappelle, like him on stage, like he talks about, like his last special, he was talking about the women that were accusing Louis C.K. of sexual harassment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't know if you saw his special, but.
No, I haven't seen it yet, no.
Yeah, he has this, can I spoil it for you?
Sure.
So he has this bit where he's like, he says, hang on, let me send this off. Right, there it is. So he has this bit where he talks about the women that accused Louis C.K. And he was like, so a lot of these women are these women that Louis masturbated in front of. Uh-huh. They said that they quit comedy because Louis C.K. ruined their dream. Saying that that incident made their dream go away. And then he goes, dare I say, madam, that you may have never had a dream. He goes, if one man jerking off takes you out of your dream, then you have a brittle spirit. He goes, do you think Martin Luther King would have stopped his dream just because some dude was jerking off on Selma?
Wow.
He goes, do you think Martin Luther King would be like, no, I can't do this. Oh, no, there's too much juice.
Oh, and wow.
It was such a funny. It's one of my favorite jokes of the year. And it's like, because that joke makes so much sense. He was, because he's talking about resilience. He's saying, yeah. You know, it's really a joke about resilience. He's saying Martin Luther King, he had a dream. And so many things were stacked against him.
Mm-hmm.
And he still decided to make a difference. So you want to be a comedian and you use the word dream, you're saying that was your dream, then that was never your dream because a man jerking off wouldn't have taken you away from your dream. So a lot of people look at that joke and they say, oh, this is a joke about Dave Chappelle not being sensitive to these women's experience. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, it's really a joke about dreams.
Mm-hmm.
So to the obvious mind, yeah, of course, yeah, he is disrespecting women. But to the comic mind, the mind that I have and the mind that I've been developing and cultivating, I look at what he's saying and I see his point and I'm like, okay, cool, that is funny.
Now, as I said, I didn't see the special, but when he did say that, how did the audience respond?
Oh, they were all, I mean, people were laughing and people, like, especially when you did the Martin Luther King act out,
uh-huh.
That was really funny. And, yeah, people were laughing and there were a lot of people that were oohing and aahing, but, I mean, he also had a point. He also made his point. And a lot of the points that some comics make, people don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest lesson I learned as a comic is that I'm going to have opinions and I'm going to say things and some people aren't going to agree with it. But if you have a strong point of view and a strong perspective, then you got to say it. Like, I'm not going to do a song and dance that I think people will like. No, man, I got to do what I think is funny.
Are you going to, being a stand-up comedian, do you cater your jokes to your audience? Like, what I mean by that is if you are in front of an all Caucasian middle-aged crowd, are you going to do the same set as if you're in an all black club?
It really depends. Like it does have an effect,
mm-hmm.
but it's really the vibe and the energy. Like there are some rooms that are like, I was in Montana doing an all white room. And the first mm-hmm. thing I said on stage is my family's from Iraq. You know what I mean? In Montana, Billings, Montana. You know what I'm saying? Like literally there was like 300 people there and literally 600 teeth. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. every person had two teeth. So it was one of those situations.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very well received. I was just able to, you know, just from years of doing it, I'm able to like kind of get the vibe. Mm-hmm. So race does have some effect, but it's really the vibe of everybody. And very rarely now have I done rooms where it's just all one race.
So the level of diversity has definitely been there, so that everybody can, like, there's something for everybody.
I'm more worried about older, younger. Like, older crowds, sometimes they really like stuff about my family. Younger crowds, when I do stuff on my family, they also enjoy it, but they also really love the stupid, silly stuff that I have.
Yeah. Is it hard to balance that as a comedian?
No, I mean, you have your sets. Like, I have my, you know, I have my showcase sets for when I'm showcasing for, like, a late-night TV show. I have that set. Mm-hmm. I have the college set for, like, college kids.
Okay.
I have the, you know, family stuff for when I do, like, you know, crowds. I have the Middle Eastern stuff for when I do Middle Eastern audiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I have these jokes ready, and they fit different occasions. So, yeah, I would say I do get an assessment of the vibe of what's happening, and then I'm like, cool, let me do these jokes. But lately, I've been relying heavily on the Middle Eastern family stuff.
Okay. Have you, since we're talking about laughter being the best medicine, has there ever been a time that you have or you've heard of, you know, a comedy show being done at a hospital for an audience of patients?
I was trying to, I was actually trying to put one of those together.
Okay. How did that go?
It was just, I don't know, man. They just got a, hospital staffs are weird. They just have a lot going on. I'm like, hey, I spoke to the person in charge of events and I was like, I'm willing to donate my time. I want to do stand up. So let me know what I can do to help. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, can you just walk into the rooms and just do stand up for people? And I'm like, oh, wow. That really work. Yeah,
that wouldn't, I wouldn't even see that working. But if it was everybody coming into a cafeteria or something, you know, I think that would be better. But to go individually room to room, I'm not seeing that play really well.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, I've done some, like, I've done a lot of benefits. I did a benefit for animals, and I was hosting a dog fashion show. So, what, in Palos Verdes, which is a very rich area.
Hey, what else do they have to do, right?
Yeah, exactly, bro. It was all 70-year-old white women that donated thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
To this dog foundation, and what they did was they gave the dogs outfits, and they had a runway, and they had a fashion show. So they said, let's have a comedian start the show. So I went on stage, and the first thing I said, I was like, all right, ladies, who's waiting for their husband to die? And yeah, and they were just completely disconnected and turned off.
Yeah. And,
I mean, it was a very, it was a risky thing to say. It was a risky thing to say, but I was like, you know what? I think this is funny. So let me see where they're at.
Okay. So I'm laughing, but
I know you're laughing, man,
but I just have this vision in my head of you standing on stage and you've got all these older women there and you're like, okay, ladies, who's waiting for their husband to die? And I'm just envisioning the look on their face as if, who the fuck is this and who let him in the door?
Yeah. But you know what, man? There were a couple people when I said that, they were laughing and clapping.
Yeah, okay. And I mean, to me, let me just be honest. To me, something like that, okay, so I'm not saying that I have a sick sense of humor, but I absolutely am someone who has said something, you know, to people for shock value. And the fact that I said something that was just so out of this world crazy, that's what the funny part was, because people, and you know, it was mostly, it is mostly with people that know me. And, you know, people have told me that I have a very, sometimes I have a very dry sense of humor. But the best comedy for me is that shock value comedy, like, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, when someone says to me, I can't believe you just said that. So I think when it comes to the shock value type of comedy, you know, if you are a very, very well-known person, like take when Dennis Leary was doing his stand-up, you know, he came across as pretty angry. And some of the things that he said, it was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he said that. But at the same time, if anybody else other than Dennis Leary would have tried to do his bit, I don't think it would have come off as funny. Or what's that dude's name? The one that has like the Bozo the Clown hairdo, and he was real serious, and everything that he said, like, I think his first name is Steve something. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Bozo the Clown hairdo?
Yeah, he's got his hair's not red, but he's bald. He was balding. And everything that he said, all of his whole stand-up bit was just him standing there being like real monotone, like he was real serious. But he was able to get his jokes off because Stephen Wright, is that his name?
Okay, yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, if someone were to try and go and do Stephen Wright's bit, it wouldn't work. So I think that some people can make certain things work. Like if
Stephen Wright was also in Half Baked.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He was the guy on the couch. He was the guy on the couch. Yeah. Yeah. So him. Just imagine somebody else other than him trying to go out and do his bit. I don't think it will work, but that's what he's known for. So I think if you're a comic that's known for something and you can kind of make something, you know, that's your wheelhouse, then I think it's a lot easier accepted. But if you try and do like the shock value type comedy, in my opinion, if a comic tries to do the shock value type comedy and that's not really in their wheelhouse because they're not delivering the jokes in a way for people to understand. He's just saying this for a laugh. He's just saying this to be serious. That was, you know, that's kind of one of the reasons why I was never a stand-up comic, because when I would do like the shock value type jokes, there would still be some people that would say, is he serious or is he joking? Is he serious or is he joking? Because if he's joking, that's cool. But if he's serious, that's fucked up. But to me, that's kind of the part of being funny. Because this person doesn't know. And the funny thing for me was, some people would get upset at some things that I would say because they didn't know me. So I think, and you know, tell me if I'm right or wrong, but I think that people have to, when you do the shock value type thing, like that joke that you did, if all of those women in that room would have known you personally, I think all of them would have laughed because you would have known, or they would have known, you didn't mean, okay, like literally you didn't mean who's waiting for their husband to die. Does that make sense? Or
yeah, exactly. I was trying to point out that, hey guys, like, you know, when you're, there's some women that when their husband passes away, they get a large sum of money. And, you know, and again, it was an interesting experience because it was something that I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. And there's a part of me that was like, no, man, you can't say that. You can't say that. Then I was like, you know what? Let me just say it and see what happens. And if I get into a hole or whatever, I'm just going to dig myself out of it. And it's going to be fun. And like, I find joy in like, I was finding joy in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see where people were at, and it was very obvious where they were at. So again, assessing the room is very important.
Yeah.
Being able to understand the climate of the room, you know, mm-hmm. and so all that stuff matters. But again, some comics are like, you know what? I don't care what it is. I'm just going to do whatever I want.
Yeah. So if you were in a room, if you were doing a show and everybody in the room was in a wheelchair, you wouldn't go up, or would you go up on stage and say, what, no standing ovation?
I mean, that right there is like an obvious kind of joke, mm-hmm. where it's like there's a lot of standing and sitting jokes. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's I mean, if there's a lot of people in wheelchairs, I don't know, like disabilities are, they're tricky.
Yeah. Yeah. So that kind of does bring up another question for me. Are making jokes about disabilities, in your opinion, are jokes about disabilities out of bounds?
It depends. Honestly, if you have something clever to say, you know, J-Lo's, I'm going to send you this video of this show called Roast Me on All Def Digital. They have this guy in a wheelchair. He's a comic, and they just roast each other. And everyone is saying wheelchair jokes to this guy. Mm-hmm. And he's laughing the whole time.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, is it wrong to say, I think it's wrong to say jokes in front of certain people, but mm-hmm. in front of this guy, he encourages it. He likes it. He thinks it's funny. There's a lot of comics. I've been seeing, there's this one comic who has one arm. Mm-hmm. Her other arm got, I think it was either burned or it had to get cut off for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And her whole act is about her hand, not having a hand. Mm-hmm. There's another comic named Drew Lynch, who's a good friend of mine. He has a stutter that's severe. Mm-hmm. His severe stutter. And he mm-hmm. that's all he talks about. He just makes fun of his stutter. Whereas most people would be like, no, don't make fun of someone's stutter. That's not polite.
Yeah. So let's take your friend with the stutter, for instance. So do you think it's okay for him to make a joke about his stutter, but if somebody else were to make a joke about him, would you think that was out of bounds?
I think it depends on where it's coming from. I mean, if it's coming from a malicious place, mm-hmm. then yeah, I don't think that's polite. Like Cheryl Underwood, her joke about that girl's dick,
sure,
came from an angry place, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she was mad. She was pissed.
Yeah. Yeah, it came from an angry place. I feel like if it comes from, like, a place of love and a place of, like, fun and joke, mm-hmm. which is essentially when I went on in that dog fashion show, that's where my heart was. I was just, I wasn't trying to hurt anyone. Mm-hmm. And I think some people can tell. So making fun of someone's stutter, I mean, if you have something clever to say about it, you say it in a, you know, and the intent is, oh, here's this joke I wrote, mm-hmm. as opposed to, here, I'm just going to insult you and hurt your feelings. Mm-hmm. No.
Okay. So would you say that, let's take, for instance, let's take our current president, Donald Trump. When people are making the jokes about, are you at the airport?
Oh, no, I was just, I stepped outside to grab an orange and the plane just flew over me.
Okay. If someone makes jokes, or you know how people make the jokes that they make about Donald Trump, you know, mm-hmm. he has a family. He's even got a young son. Do you think that it's out of bounds to talk about somebody specifically? Because, you know, their family is going to, you know, is going to hear it as well. And then their friends are going to hear it. And then, you know, it can turn into a negative situation. I understand comedy is comedy. I totally get that. But is there ever a time in comedy that a proverbial line has to be drawn, in your opinion?
Well, the Kathy Griffin thing.
Yeah.
I draw the line there. And the only reason is because it's just not funny. Mm-hmm. So I think if, honestly, you get a pass if it's funny. But my definition of what's funny is a little bit different than most people.
Exactly.
So that's really what it is. It's perspective, because what I think is funny, what someone else thinks is funny, might be different. Like, someone might be like, oh, this is so funny. And then I'll look at the joke, which happens often, and I'm like, yeah, this joke is not that funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an easy joke.
Have you ever, being the host, I mean, you do host more than one comedy show. So has there ever been a time where after a comic set, you have gone up to them and you have said, you know what, dude, that shit wasn't funny. Or, you know, you might want to try and change this up a little bit. Or has there even been a time where you have told a promoter, you know what, if this guy is ever on the set list again, I'm not gonna host this show.
No, I mean, man. I mean, the shows that I do, they don't put people up that are just like disrespectful, and you know, they don't really put up those comics.
Okay.
Like maybe at some bar show, you'll find some of those types. But yeah. Very, very, very rarely.
Very rarely. Okay.
Sometimes on the road. Sometimes you go on the road and, you know, they're just like the local comics, and they're just like,
mm-hmm.
obviously local comics for a reason.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They got the miles. I get that. They got airline miles. They can come to New York or L.A.
Yeah.
Just a matter of some other variables.
Yeah. So getting kind of back to the laughter is the best medicine. You know, if someone is angry all the time, you know, they run the risk of having hypertension. They run the risk of having high blood pressure. They even have the risk, if someone is too stressed out,
they run the
risk of having a heart attack or having a stroke. So it seems to me that laughter does the absolute opposite. It helps loosen you up. Why do you think, in your opinion, as a comedian, why do you think we have become such a serious society, so to speak? Bless you.
Thanks, man. I sneezed. I yawned. I went through a lot of transitions in this phone call. I don't think people are serious. I think people are sensitive.
Okay, that's a good point.
That's what I really think it is. I think people are just people are sensitive, man, and people are, you know, and a lot of it is for viral reasons. Someone will share an outrage, and mm-hmm. it'll get millions of shares.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I thought of this theory. I feel like there's people that are woke, and there's people mm-hmm. that are digitally woke. Now, woke is the people that are actually, like, at the protest. People are actually doing stuff. People are actually trying to make an effort to change whatever social issues are happening that bother them. Mm-hmm. Digital woke are the people that just retweet it and share and think of tweets and mm-hmm. Facebook posts, and they make videos because they mm-hmm. want them to go viral, but then they never do shit. Right? So,
yeah.
I think sensitivity-wise is that there's a lot of digital woke people that are looking for any reason to hang their to try and have an opinion about something. So people are sensitive, man. Like, you can't, you know, you like the Aziz Ansari situation. There's a lot of situations that recently came up that some people have different takes on. You know, like some people say that Aziz Ansari situation, they're like, that's not rape or whatever it is that people accused him of. That's just a bad date.
Yeah. Fill us in on the Aziz Ansari, the Aziz situation, because I'm not really too familiar with it.
Oh, so Aziz Ansari essentially took a girl on a date, and I believe it was a second date.
Uh-huh.
And he was just like being creepy, and And I might be paraphrasing kind of what's happening, but essentially, just to be vague and just so I don't say the wrong thing.
Yeah.
It was he was being sexually aggressive with her, and she kind of went with it. And it was obvious the reason why she went with it is because it's Aziz Ansari, and she just wanted to hang out with a famous person.
Okay.
That's what it seemed like. It seemed like he was a famous person hanging out with this girl. She was conceding to a lot of things. And then afterwards she goes, why did I concede to these things?
Okay.
And, right. So that's essentially kind of the backbone of it. And a lot of people are saying, oh, that's sexual misconduct on Aziz Ansari's part. But it's like, he never told her to stay. He never said, he never locked the door. Uh-huh. He never told her you can't leave. Uh-huh. He never, you know, he never suggested sex. She's never said no. You know, she didn't have any hesitation. And they didn't have sex. They were just like fooling around, and I guess. And so, and I guess they hooked up like the day before. And then, so, I mean, it's just like, he's just a creepy guy. So,
yeah.
Some people tweeted, they were like, you know, I think that girl should have just left.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of try to bury this man and ruin his reputation.
Mm-hmm.
And people were going after those people who tweeted things like that. Like, yeah, you don't get it. You're a piece of shit. You're an awful human being. And then there's the other side of people that are saying, no, that guy's right. What's wrong with what he's saying? It was just a bad date. So the thing is, there's a lot of sensitivity towards a lot of things. And I get it. Women have been treated unfairly for centuries.
Absolutely.
Women have been oppressed against forever. So I feel like right now in this period, the reason why people are sensitive is because this is a transitional period, and we're going to find it. We're going to find a nice groove of being sensitive and being open.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, things are just a little crazy. So I feel like it'll find its voice.
Do you think it has
a TV show?
Do you think it has anything to do with the type of comics that are coming out? Because, you know, we absolutely do have a good level of comics now that are funny. But because everybody is so sensitive, I mean, in today's day and age, I would almost be scared to be a stand-up comedian, because I would have to know that no matter what joke I gave, no matter what joke I delivered, somebody in my audience is going to be offended. Like, you might be offended at one joke, but then you're laughing yourself to tears at another joke. And to me, I think that's so hypocritical. And just in my opinion, you know, if somebody... Basically, what you're saying is you can't say this, but you can say this. But the joke that they were offended about, somebody else in the comedy club could be crying tears about, could be laughing themselves to tears. To the joke that they are themselves laughing themselves to tears, somebody else could be offended by. So it's almost like you have to please everybody. And, you know, that's just not a possibility. So is it hard nowadays to write jokes, or is it the stand-up comics thought pattern? Look, I'm going to be funny. Some people are going to be offended. Fuck it. I'm just going to roll with it.
Again, man, I think if I'm not afraid to say anything if I have a strong opinion about it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like what I've learned to do is I don't hold my thoughts hostage. I don't hold my opinion hostage. And I use Twitter for a lot of those things where if I have something to say about something, I'll say it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, I like to think I'm not a terrible person. And I have a pretty good perspective on things. So... Mm-hmm. I'm very sensitive to people's feelings, and I'm not racist, and I'm not in any clan or group or whatever, mm-hmm. You know? And so I feel like if I have something to say, I have something to say. So I'm not afraid to say my opinion on stage, but it is hard to say your opinion on stage because it's you really leave yourself vulnerable to get attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And you leave, and that's the thing. You have to not give a fuck, man. Like Jay Lewis, you'll go to an audition and, you know, people look at you and they say, oh, man, look at this guy. This guy, he's a black guy. Oh, this guy has an eye patch. Mm-hmm. Oh, who is this guy? People, mm-hmm. they make a lot of split decisions, but still you have the courage to say and do your art.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And yes. That's why, and that's, you know, and I respect people like that. And that's what you got to do on stage. It's like, yeah, you know what? My opinion is this. This is why I think this way.
Mm-hmm.
So if you hate me, hate me. But this is my opinion. And this is the facts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why there's a lot of shock value comedians. They'll just be like, you know, I think men suck or whatever. I think women should stay home and work or whatever their opinion is. That sounds bigot like. Mm-hmm. If they have a point and it's backed by evidence, then it's like, oh, okay, cool. This person just make an argument.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. What do you think we as a society, and I think me and my listeners already know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What do you think as a society we need to do to loosen up?
I think it's just going to take time, man. I feel like it's just a trend right now, and people are unaware that they're very tight. So I think within time, everything's going to come together because there's a lot of necessary movements that are happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And like I can name two right now, which is Me Too movement and Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Those are two very important movements that are very important to our history and our culture mm-hmm. as Americans and mm-hmm. just in the world in general. So I would say, I feel like it's eventually going to find its balance. And in the meantime, you know, just, I think laugh. If you see something's funny, you laugh at it. Like, I feel like people need to stop policing and finding evil in everything.
Uh-huh.
And I think find the opposite of evil, in my opinion, is funny. I don't think it's evil and good. I think it's evil and I think it's funny.
There you have it. Well, I thank you once again. Paul, we've come to the end of our show, and you know, when I have a show with you, it doesn't even seem like it's an hour, but we've done our thing. I usually, as you know, from my first show, I usually ask my guests to leave my listeners with something. So what would you like to leave my listeners with today?
Two things. So you have to forgive me. I'm about to self-promote right quick. You know, your boy got a TV show coming out on True TV called Laugh Tracks.
Okay.
And my episode airs tomorrow, 11:10 Central on True TV. It's right after Impractical Jokers. So check that out.
Okay.
And I have a movie coming out March 13th called Stillwater.
Mm-hmm.
And it's with myself and Tyler Ritter. And that's going to be available on iTunes, VOD, and all other digital platforms. If you want to follow me on social media, Paul Elia, E-L-I-A, Nice Guy. And follow me there. And my website's the same thing, PaulElianiceGuy.com. That's where I post everything. And for parting words of wisdom, the mm-hmm. opposite of evil is funny.
Thank you, sir. And, you know, I usually do end the show, you know, with my personal parting comments. And, you know, what I would like to tell my listeners is, you know, in such a time of tragedy, in such a time of peril, in such a time of our country being as disconnected as we are, I think that when I hear laughter is the best medicine, I'm sure it does help with some medical issues, but I think laughter helps a lot with social issues, just like I think music will bring people together. I'm not trying to be Madonna, but she has a song, music brings the people together. Music brings the bourgeoisie and whatever else she says. She's basically saying that it brings people together. And I really think that comedy and I really think that laughter brings people together. I don't think it makes you drop your guard, but I just think it brings you to a place where, you know, you can deal with people more. You can understand someone, what someone is saying more. I think humor and laughter and comedy, I think they are all three great tools that we as a society are lacking. And I think we're lacking that because we believe it's not proper to laugh anymore, not as much as we used to. I know myself personally, I tend to be a pretty serious guy, but I absolutely know when it's time to laugh and when it's not time to laugh. So I just think us as a society, us as a people, not even just here in this country, but worldwide, I think that if we took more time to laugh and enjoy more, stop looking so much at all of the negative. There is more to life than just negativity. There is more to life than trying to bash somebody else. There's more to life than trying to talk shit about somebody. Just enjoy more. Enjoy your lives more. Enjoy what's going on around you more. And appreciate more. And I think if we can come to that, if we can come to that place, then I think we would all be better for it. Paul, I thank you very kindly once again for being here.
Thank you, man.
I you know, everything that you just said, your website and all of that, I will make sure that it's also on the show page. But I am going to post an article. I forgot the name, and I'm so sorry I don't have it in front of me. But there is an article that I read. It's from one of the medical websites, and it actually specifically talks about the specific things that laughter is good for and what laughing can do for you physically. So I'm going to make sure I post that. Make sure you join me next week. I'm still I'm going between two different guests, so I don't know exactly what next week is.
Are you inspired? Can I inspire you more? Come join me every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. on Station 2 here at BBS Radio. Let's get inspired together. Come join me. You'll be glad you did.